Welcome to the Sabbath Hour. I'm Brother Gregory, and I talk about the Kingdom of God, and I've been invited to do this show, the Sabbath Hour, introducing actually what I guess is 3 hours of show. I won't be able to stick around for the second 2 hours because I have obligations here I have to meet, but there'll be other people on the line. There's a call-in number, if I can remember it here. I think I've got it still open here. 347-324-3704. And you can call in with your questions. And why they picked me to introduce this show on the Freedomizer Radio, you'll have to ask them. But I do talk a lot about freedom, but it's freedom under God, which is a different kind of bondage. It's a bondage based on love and caring for one another. Love of God, love of righteousness, love of truth, and caring enough about the precepts of that to want it for other people. That isn't a touchy-feely kind of love necessarily. Sometimes that's a rebuking kind of love, the love that kind of tells you you're doing wrong when you are, that you're headed the wrong way when you're headed the wrong way, so that you don't end up in a pit. And unfortunately, that's about where everybody is today, because the preachers of what is posing as the church established by Jesus Christ, which is just about every church out there, has gone under a strong delusion and have, through that delusion, not borne the fruit of liberty under God, but has brought people to the edge of a precipice of destruction while wallowing in a sea of bondage. And there's all kinds of bondage. And one of the chief elements of bondage, I was talking to one of our brethren just earlier today, and one of the key bars or chains that binds us in that bondage is the unwillingness to forgive others, to forgive debt. This whole world is in a bondage of one form of debt or another, and that debt has come about because we were supposedly going to get all these free benefits, but of course they're not free. They come at the expense of our neighbor, and we've signed up for them, and we started paying into them, and we've done some of that out of ignorance, and some of that out of sloth, and some of that out of avarice and greed. And how much we're willing to repent of the non-virtuous activities and become diligent in the virtuous activities is going to determine how close to real freedom we become. And so that's going to be confusing to some people. Some of you who have heard me for a while probably know exactly what I'm talking about, but others are like, what are you talking about? So anyway, to do justice to the people that have invited me, I took a look at their website, and I had it open here a little bit ago. There we go. Which is the WisconsinFreeState.com, and particularly the page Covenants, HTML. And I read that over the other night in preparation for the program, besides taking up an hour of my time to do this, and maybe even a little bit more so that I can get back here to do this and then get back to where I need to be. I also did a little bit of research to find out what I could talk about that would be of value to the people that have invited me and those people that are listening and looking to them for some sort of answers. Now, we have to be very careful when we look to anybody for an answer because that's, of course, how we got into the problems that we are in the world today, is that we were looking in all the wrong places and got a lot of the wrong answers. But anyway, on that page, they talk about we, the free men and free women for the Wisconsin Free States, do form this covenant with our Almighty Creator and recognize His laws as our only law and the sovereign unalienable, we'll use that particular pronunciation, and inherent rights granted to all of mankind by our Almighty Creator, those rights being life, liberty, private property, and the pursuit of happiness. Actually, in some places, you actually include the right of marriage, which is not to be subject to the administration of government. And if you read our book, Covenants of the Gods, the chapter on citizen versus citizen, we show you where that is actually the one of the list of things that includes our right of, as well as also the right to contract, which, of course, marriage is a sort of contract, although the emphasis is not on contract but upon relationships. One of the things a lot of people don't understand in law, we think a contract makes a law, and that is the case. A great deal of the power and influence that government has today is the result of contracts. Yes, some of those contracts are constructive, but if you're entering into an activity that there is no normal remedy at common law, then according to the Judiciary Act of 1789, Section 19, for all those who are going to be looking this up, anytime that there is no remedy at common law for the activities that you are pursuing, the remedy will be found in equity. And, of course, most of the activities today pursued by U.S. citizens, as well as many other countries, there is no remedy at common law for those activities. And so, therefore, the remedy will be in equity. Therefore, the remedy will be regulated by Congress. Therefore, you're not dealing with your unalienable rights. You're dealing with your contractual obligations. You can't just get rid of even a constructive contract by waving your hand, especially if debt is involved. And that, of course, is where we're at. Everything from your public school education to welfare to unemployment to almost everything has been subsidized. The states have been heavily subsidized by the federal government, and therefore there is a debt involved, and that debt is what creates the strength of the bars that bind you, the strength of the chain that binds you. So therefore, in order to get out of that debt, you have to forgive any debt that might be owed you. And how do we go about that? And how do you press that point in dealing with the present bondage? And the fact is, the present bondage of the world is not unique to this time. It was exactly what was going on at the time of Jesus Christ. It had been going on for at least 160 years with a certain amount of intensity under Herod the Great. It grew because of the baptism of Herod the Great, which is what made you a member of their Corban system, which was their social welfare system, which is why Paul says what should have been for your welfare has become a snare. If you don't understand the history of their welfare system, which was Corban, and how it was operating and how it comes about, you can read the Bible and absolutely miss the secrets of the kingdom of heaven, the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven. So ignorance of history, which comes from not reading all the other apocrypha that are not in the Bible, will cause you to be ignorantly led about by the nose when you do read the Bible by other pastors, ministers who didn't know the history either. And I don't necessarily always blame them, because there's been a concerted effort to keep you from understanding this history. And if you don't learn from history, you're doomed to repeat it. Now, some of you are waking up in spite of the fact that you didn't really know the history and what the Bible was really telling you, and you're saying something's wrong, and you're grasping at a lot of different things, trying to figure out what was wrong, and because you're drowning in this sea of bondage and debt and helplessness. And that's understandable, but let's just tread water for a little bit, okay? Don't thrash about so much. Don't be so sure I'm wrong when I say something that seems contrary to what you've already accepted as true. Let's take a look at these things calmly, patiently. There's no way to talk about this subject without missing some very important points, because the conversation just gets too long, because there's so many little aspects that we've missed, so many steps that we missed. So therefore, we have to do a little kind of hop, skip, and jump from time to time in order to get through an hour-long program. But we do write books, and even the books, like Covenants of the Gods, each chapter is about 5,000 words, 6,000 words. It started from, which makes about 12 half-size pages, 5 by 8.5 pages. in 5,000 words, that's a doable print size. The reality is that each of those chapters started with about 75 full-size pages, and I was forced to condense them down by the spirit that was in me saying, you have to condense this down so that people will read it up. One reason, it would be too heavy for a lot of people to lift, and the other is that very few people want to read that kind of text and do that kind of detailed study. The reality is on this message that we have is that you don't need to know all the details, although we go through things in a rather step-by-step process. You have to read the footnotes. I don't know anybody who hasn't read the books more than once that said, every time I read it, I get more out of it, because everything is kind of connected. And there's this precept upon precept. Each chapter is like a spoke of a wheel, and each one is coming to a central point and theme. And it's not giving you an answer, but it's giving you a detailed look at the problem. And that's what we need, is to understand the problem in order to find the solution. Now, that's only one step in finding the solution, but it's a critical part of the solution. So one of the things when you're talking, you know, in this little part that I read from that page, We the Free Men and Women of the Wisconsin Free State, there really isn't very many of those things. There's a lot of people who want to be the free men and women of Wisconsin and a lot of other states and a lot of other countries, and they're all just as important to me as anybody else. But the reality is that most people are not really free. They're back in the bondage of Egypt. They don't want to be there, and there was a solution that was provided under Abraham, and the same thing, like I said, was taking place in Israel, or Judah, as they called it then, at the time of Jesus Christ. Same thing was going on in Rome, which was originally a republic, became an indirect democracy, and then an imperial power. Because history continues to repeat itself, there is a solution. Christ brought it. Moses had brought it. Christ made it even clearer. And if we were actually doing what Christ and the early Christians were doing, there would be lots of free men and women in Wisconsin and all the other states and many of the other countries, because they all claim to be Christians, but they really are not doing what Christ said. I spoke this morning on LibertyRadioLive.com. We have a two-hour show every morning. We also have a half-hour blog talk show before that. You can find out all the details on the Living Network at hisholychurch.org. But in those shows, we'll talk and we answer a lot of questions this morning about all these things that are hidden from you, the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, the secrets that they are keeping from you. And it's going to take a little bit of a learning curve, a little bit over time, to begin to let all those things sink in. But one thing we need to realize, that if we do not care about other people's freedom as much as we care about our own, you can kiss freedom goodbye. It will be absolutely essential that you gather together and bind yourself by this honorable caring one for each other. You cannot do this any other way. Go watch Lord of the Rings. They had to work together. They had to be willing to sacrifice each other in order to obtain the goal. And the goal, if it's freedom only for yourself, forget about it. It isn't going to work. Make yourself as comfortable a slave as you can. Get inserted back into the matrix and just have a good time, because you're wasting your time. And you will be wasting ours if we ever are foolish enough to depend upon you, if all you're interested in is freeing yourself. I always warn people, last place you want to be is in a foxhole with a bunch of survivalists when the food runs out, because suddenly you're on the menu. So that basic precept and some of the other things I mentioned should be kept in mind as we go over this, because this page goes on in to the laws set forth by the Almighty Creator, were cast in stone as commandments. Well, we could talk about that word commandments in Hebrew, but basically the Ten Commandments were a guidepost, and they were a guidepost to show you the way. If they were really laws, there would be a list of penalties if you violated them, but they are laws like the law of gravity. There isn't a penalty to the law of gravity. There's a result. There's a cause and effect. And there's a cause and effect with these. But there's no imposed penalty. There's just cause and effect. And we live in a cause and effect universe. And so he's telling you where the dangerous pitfalls are. If you go this way, you're liable to fall. If you step over the edge of the building, gravity takes over. And so if you don't follow these guidelines, these automatically, something's going to be kicking in that's going to bring about a result, of many of which you will not enjoy, appreciate, or like. You will call the result punishment, but in reality, it's just cause and effect. So anyway, they reword these from the original Ten Commandments that you find. Of course, the English version is a rewording of the Hebrew version, and most people don't know Hebrew, and that's another whole subject we'll have to address at another time. But I think this is a good exercise in wording these in another way, and I thought so much of it. We have done it years ago, and you'll find it in the book, The Free Church Report. You'll find it on our website, where we have reworded the Ten Commandments slightly. We don't call it necessarily the Ten Commandments, but you can recognize what we're talking about. And the reason we reword it is so that people look at it and think about these things, you know. I'm fond of saying you can lead a Christian to knowledge, but you can't make them think. But anything you can do to encourage them to think is probably a good idea, because they lack that ability. We'll start with number one. They write, "Thou shalt have no other almighty ones before me." Interesting way of putting it. We write, "We shall have no other ruling judges in the place of God, the creator of heaven and earth." And that's, we put ruling judges there because the word Elohim, which we translate into God, is the meaning of it, is actually ruling judges. And they even translate it as judges sometimes in the Bible. They could translate it a lot more as judges, but there's some places where they just cannot get away with saying gods. They have to use something else, and they use judges, because that's what the word Elohim means. Who is the judge of your life? Is it men who have the power to judge you, to rule over you, to decide what is good and evil for you to do and not do? If so, they are your gods. You can put it a small g, you can take the O out, but that's what we're dealing with, is they're the gods. And this is why it says you should make no covenants with them nor with their gods, no agreements, no contracts. Because when you do, you create a new set of laws. And those laws will have penalties, not simply cause and effect. And you will be giving men power. And we know that when we gave Saul, a good guy, power, it corrupted him. So we should not be giving men power, because it will corrupt them. If you create offices of power, men who seek power will seek office. So you should not make covenants with anybody that they might become the ruling judges of your life. That's what they're talking about. Thou shalt not bow to images, it says in their version of number two. We say we shall not institute systems. I have to get closer here. As a substitute for the ruling of our hearts and minds by God. We think of graven images as something you make with your hands, and of course graven images can be something you make with your hands, and we talked about this morning, that graven images doesn't have to be done with your hands. Before an artist makes anything with his hands, he makes it in his head. And that's what we've done. We've created an image of God in our minds, and we worship that image. And anybody else who doesn't worship that image that we have created, we call a heretic. But the reality is that you do not create God. You do not create this concept of right and wrong. It exists. It pre-exists us. And we should be trying to find out what it is, find out who God is, find out what righteousness is. And that's the struggle. And people have to work together to do that, because some people will come up with some pretty goofy ideas. And if you really care about one another, you should help protect your neighbor from those goofy idea believers. And that is really what it's all about. But that image doesn't have to be an actual stone idol or something carved out of wood. It can be an idea, and that is common in every church, that they draw a picture of who they think Jesus is, and you have to worship that or they'll kick you out of their church, which wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing, but I've been kicked out of lots of them, or to some degree or another anyway. Number three, thou shalt not bring the name of the Almighty Creator to naught. Now, that's an interesting way to word it, too. And I say in here, we shall not go under the authority of another name, but remain the Lord's. Again, the name is, and we talked about this in the show this morning for 20 minutes or so, is that a name is, we think of it, when we say the word name, we think of an identity card, a name that was given to us by our parents, or you know, what we're called, and it's how we identify ourselves. And the reality is the names used to be a description of us to tell us what we were like and who we were. And I gave the example, Indians used to have names like stabs in the back, because he snuck up on people so stealthily, they called him stabs in the back. Not because he was betraying people, but that he could sneak up on an enemy and they wouldn't even know he was there. Very stealthy in the woods, very quiet in the woods. So it was a complimentary name, but to us it doesn't sound like that. But that name wasn't what he was given when he was a child. That was a name that was given to identify the kind of guy he was. And there were a lot of other names. Some of them were kind of humorous and funny, but they were actually complimentary names describing who he was. This was common amongst Anglo-Saxons in Europe as well. Names meant something. They were descriptive terms. They didn't need a card to identify them. Who they were was who identified them. And this is what it is. We claim to be worshiping God, but we are acting more like Nimrod. We're acting more like Cain and Lamech. So when we claim that, yeah, we're worshiping the God of heaven, but we're doing all the things that Herod did and Nimrod did, and forcing our neighbor to contribute to our welfare at the point of a gun, then we're taking the name of the Lord in vain. You're not worshiping Christ. Christ wouldn't even take a gun up to defend himself. Not that he didn't tell Peter to throw away his sword. He just said, put it away in that particular circumstance. You can read our four-part series on Does a Christian Have a Right to Self-Defense? At newswithviews.com, and you can probably find a link to it on our outline page at hisholychurch.org. There's actually police training schools that are now using our course, our four articles in their course. So anyway, that taking the name of the Lord in vain, that's common amongst churches today. They all do it, because they're not really doing things according to the character of Christ, the character of our Father. They actually pray to men who call themselves benefactors and who exercise authority one over the other, which Christ said not to do. They say, Lord, Lord, but they do not do it the will of the Father. Why would God send Moses to deliver us out of the bondage of Egypt and then send Christ to start a church that say it's okay to be in the bondage of Egypt? It's not okay. It's not where you should be. It's not where God wants you to be. And if the church was doing what it should be doing for the last 100 years, you would not be in this present predicament. And that's because the churches have taken the name of the Lord in vain. They have created an image of Christ that is false. Now, I will admit, many of them have been deceived, but okay, it's time to repent and turn around. Let's go the other way. And so anyway, to keep moving here, we're coming up on a break here pretty soon. So I think we can get one more in here. Remember the Sabbath to keep it set apart. And we say over here, we shall strive to labor before we enter into our rest, living by faith, hope, and charity. Now, so why do I word that so much different? What is the Sabbath? The Sabbath is your day of rest after 6 days of work. What is Sunday? That's taking the first day off and owing your labor for the next 6 days. It's not the day. It's the precept expressed in the idioms of the language of Hebrew. They go back to ancient times, a language that was meant to be written, not spoken. It was a codified language where each letter has a meaning, and you bring those letters together to create the word. It has nothing to do with sounds. It's like Chinese and Japanese. And once you understand the meaning of the letters, you can start understanding the concepts. But even then, you will not be able to translate it without understanding the Spirit of God, who wants you to be free souls under Him. And what better ruler to be free souls under is one that wants you to have free choice and the exercise of free choice, the higher liberty, which is another book I've written. All these books you can get online for free. We recommend that you join the network, the Living Network, by downloading you don't have to download, but just a drop-down menu on hisholychurch.org and under the guy with the net, and connect with people in your local area and start forming groups. You can call them cell groups. We call them congregation. It's more politically correct. That care about each other and care about the next congregation and their freedom and their rights and their children and their children's children as much as you care about your own. Because that is an essential element of a free society. So we're going to go into a commercial break here in a minute, and we'll continue with some of these others, but keeping the Sabbath has as much to keep out of debt, about keeping out of debt, about earning your way, about doing the work first and then taking your rest, as it does anything else. And the day is superfluous to that. Although I like to take off a Sabbath, you guys got me doing 3.5 hours of radio programs on the Sabbath. So much for the poor old minister. Yeah, but I'll take time. That's you, Cheryl. You're my audience here. So anyway, you can lead us into a commercial, I guess, break. You told me to give you a heads up, and I see my clock says 3:29. I guess that's about the half hour mark.
That's perfect. You did a great job. Thank you for tuning in. You're listening to the Sabbath Hour with Brother Gregory. My name is Cheryl, and our show is being hosted by Freedomizer Radio. We'll be back in a few moments. We're back, Brother Gregory, and thank you very much for tuning in, and thank you so much for being here with us today. I've enjoyed your talk so far, and am really interested in hearing more about what you were saying about honoring the Sabbath.
Yeah, we were going through the Ten Commandments and comparing. Most people know the Ten Commandments. I don't think they've ever been numbered quite right. They don't come with numbers. There's so many thou shalts, but they kind of mix up, I think, some of the explanation with the thou shalt nots. And again, what we said in the earlier part of the show, that the Ten Commandments are guideposts with no penalties prescribed, really. But because we live in this cause and effect universe, if you step off the edge of the building, gravity takes over. If you make covenants with them or with their God, something happens. They're corrupted by the power you give them, and you go under their authority, and you become a human resource. They actually are using the term capital now in order to describe employees of the federal government. Human capital. You can't get something more obvious. I mean, it's like rubbing your nose in it. But the reality is that's what we've become. I was at a Bible study just the other day, and somebody was talking like the Israelites were not under bondage at the beginning when they came into Egypt, that they didn't become slaves till later. Well, there never was much slavery in Egypt. They didn't have need for it. They had another form of bondage called a corvi. a statutory labor. And you'll see reference to this in the Hebrew in Jeremiah and Isaiah and certainly in Exodus, and it's described 20% of everything you earn had to go to the Pharaoh, or you had to work it off as a laborer. And that was the bondage of Egypt. You had to pay that in order to obtain your social welfare of free grain when there was a shortage. And that was the bondage of Egypt. And it's the bondage of America today. It's the bondage of Australia. It's the bondage of Canada. You have to pay 20% of what you earn into the government or more. Joseph had a ceiling limit, 20% only, but through crafts of state, this increased, and the bondage increased so much that they were actually aborting their children because of the economic pressures that were coming with this civil bondage in a Corvey system of statutory labor. It's exactly what's happening today. History is repeating itself. And so now we come onto the fifth commandment by some numbering of the commandments. At least that's what we have here. Thou shalt respect thy father and mother. Now, the actual words in the original Ten Commandments talks about honoring your father and your mother. And the word honoring there is the same exact word that is also translated liver elsewhere in the Bible. And what it means is to fatten your father and your mother. Most people don't realize that income tax is a patrimonial right. Tribute is a patrimonial right, and income tax is a form of tribute. And the Bible talks about tribute in a number of places. And one thing they say is the slothful shall be under tribute. Slothful in what? Slothful in honoring your father and your mother. The institution that God created to govern you is the family. And 80 to 90% of the governing you need should be done in the family. And you should work out together your salvation. One of the chief purposes of modern government is to undermine the family. They take the children out of the home and educate them somewhere else. They tell the woman, we're going to liberate you so you can go to work for us in the workplace. We take the old folks and we put them off in an old folks home somewhere, or we provide them with Social Security so that they don't need to go back to their family for their support. We tell young people the first thing you want to do is get out of the home and get your own place and become independent of the family. They don't want you independent of them. They just want you independent of the family. I could go through story after story after story how this is undermining the family at every turn. But the family was the core of society. It's where society is born, in the family. And of course, when you create a society like that, next thing you know, you'll be plagued with homosexuality and the perversion of natural uses, because you don't need that anymore. The numbers of children you have will even dwindle, and the children will not respect their parents. But of course, the first thing the parents did out of the box is say, I'm too stupid to teach you. You have to be taught by the government. And so we send you to government schools. We encourage every congregation to do homeschooling and to help each other do homeschooling. Those amongst you who are in a congregation that are single, you should be helping the families do homeschooling. We had a guy, we're having a fall festival again this year. We're actually calling it the Burning Bush Festival, but it's just basically our annual fall festival. It's similar to the Feast of Tabernacles in its original purposes of bringing people together. And you can find out about it by going to hisholychurch.org and clicking on events. A lot of the information now is being put up at preparingyou.com under the Burning Bush Festival, which you can link to right there on the front page. And we will eventually have a webpage dedicated just to that, because we're hoping to eventually, we probably won't do it this first year. We've had feasts here before, but we would eventually like to have thousands of people show up. We have the room. We just need the participation. And I think there's a lot of lessons to be learned. The early church had these festivals, and we know Israel had these festivals. And I've taught in the past, and I won't do it in this particular show, why they came together. There's a reason. You know, God doesn't need you to come together and live in a tent for a week, but there's a very good reason why Israel was doing that every year in a different place. and it was about how you bind a nation together without limiting their rights. That's really what the festivals were all about, because you're not bound together by contracts. You're bound together by love for one another. And I point this out over and over again, like the movie Band of Brothers. They succeeded through their trials and tribulations in Europe, not because of the Constitution, not because of their love of the presidency, not because of their salutations to a flag, but because they cared about one another. And that isn't born overnight. That has to be built, and that's why you need to start coming together now, because the more you do now, the less you'll have to do later, and there's a lot you're going to have to do later. So anyway, going back to that honoring your father and the mother, how do you bring families together without diminishing the authority within each family? You do it through congregations that are bound by charity, by love for one another. You have a problem, somebody breaks their leg, somebody has a financial problem, somebody gets sick, where do you go? You go to church. You go to the congregation of people that are networked together all across the country, and you say, what can I do? This has happened to me. Who will help me? And you help each other, and people begin to remember that, and people honor each other. But the honoring your father and your mother, that's where you go, that's where your bank is, that's where your connection with the rest of society is. But we don't do that. We've lost that skill. We don't understand. I always used to tease, Hillary Clinton said it takes a village. Well, it does take a village. She's right. But in a real village, she'd probably be burned at the stake, because she would want to run the village and set up health care and everything else. And a real village operates by faith, hope, and charity, by helping one another, by being there for each other and developing the bonds of a real society. If you don't do it that way, you'll end up with people raped in the streets, murdered in the streets, robbed in the streets, and nobody will come to their aid, because there will be no hue and cry, because you don't really care about anybody else but yourself. So you see how the original theme that I talked about is so important, and you need to bind yourself together through this method with other people that's important too. And that will be your treasure. You each will be a part of the treasure. You keep your money in your pocket. You keep your treasure at home. One of the projects we have is Seed Savers. Every congregation, every family in every congregation should be trying to grow at least one crop in their backyard for the reproduction of seed. And that becomes a trade good. It becomes a skill. It becomes an invaluable asset, more valuable than gold. You don't put it in a big vault in Norway like Rockefellers have done. You put it somewhere in your own house. You learn how to store seed and keep them safe. And you share them with others who are willing to share with you in time of need. Because that's one thing that there's going to be a great shortage of someday in this country. There already has been signs of it in seeds. The first sign of hunger, garden seeds will disappear off the shelf. So anyway, let's go on to other things. Honor, family is the core to the kingdom. That is the institution of Christ. All these other governments, men institute themselves. The kingdom of God is not a corporate government. It is a government based on faith, hope, and charity. So you maintain your rights by maintaining your responsibilities, is really what it comes down to. Your responsibilities to yourself and your family and to others. Okay, the next one, thou shalt not murder. Well, murder, if I cut off your finger, have I murdered you? Well, I murdered your finger. So murder isn't, just stabbing somebody in the chest. Murder is anything that kills other people. If you kill somebody 2 years before they would have died, then you've murdered them. So the production of GMOs, the production of unhealthy food substances and poor crops that look good but are unnutritious, you're murdering people a little at a time. You're poisoning them a little at a time. So that's legal in America today. As a matter of fact, if you want to save your life and know if their products have any GMOs in them, genetically modified organisms in them, you're not allowed to know. They've made it against the law for you to advertise your products as GMO-free. So that's legal murder, abortion. on and on and on. We do it all the time. And if you're a part of the system, you're a part of that murdering element of society. I'm not saying to immediately part from the system. I'm saying start turning around and developing the system of God, the system that we see Moses doing originally, not what it became, and the system of early Christianity, not what it became, but what they originally intended. And the more you study what we have to offer, the more you'll realize it's just amazing. And the amazing thing is it's legal today. And will probably remain legal for quite some time because some of the puppeteers behind the scene have allowed the laws to be put in place. They actually prescribe that they're in place, but you wouldn't hardly know it. You wouldn't hardly be able to find your way through this labyrinth. We found our way, and we've left the tracks, the breadcrumbs, in the books that we offer. And with those that we see diligently seeking liberty for others as well as for themselves, we'll slice them off whole slices of bread instead of just crumbs. It's the other church that we refer to as the crummy church, that the one that just gives you a little wafer of the Eucharist of Christ. Eucharist, you know what that means in Greek? It means thanksgiving. That's the Eucharist of Christ, being thankful for the opportunity of helping others. But we don't want to dilute the ability to help others by helping those who will not help others. You have to pursue the not only your own liberty, but the liberty for others. So let's get on to number 7, thou shalt not commit adultery. Or in your case, you've written, thou shalt not adulterate. And that's actually very accurate because most of adultery doesn't have to do with sexual relations outside of marriage. That's what everybody thinks when they think of adultery. In the Bible, most of the places you see adultery, it has to do with national adultery, adulterating your relationship. If you contract away your right to help or to be a husband or to be a wife, you're adulterating your marriage already. If you're contracting away your right to raise your children in the principles and virtues of God, you're adulterating your family. If you can actually go on to, if you're eating these GMOs, you're adulterating your body. So it's a very all-encompassing. It has to do with unnaturally mingling that which is not healthy and good for you or your family. Okay, number 8, thou shalt not steal. Well, that's pretty clear. A lot of people refer to taxation as stealing. We actually haven't got to things like income tax yet here in the commandments. It's in here. It's not really stealing because, although there may be some stealing involved with things like that, generally speaking, that's not the one it comes under. But, and then where would you put usury? Is usury under stealing or is it under thou shalt not covet? But anyway, the next one is thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. Well, you shouldn't bear false witness really against anybody, neighbor or even stranger, but we bear false witness all the time. They have their truth in advertising laws, but we do it all the time. And that actually is kind of encompassed in the idea that we say that we take the name of the Lord in vain. These churches, they're bearing false witness because they're telling us things that Christ didn't do. They have their what they call their sound doctrines, and they're actually hollow because about 60% of the time, or maybe more, 70% of the time when Jesus is giving instructions, which are his doctrines, he's talking about things you need to do and not do. Forgive so that you may be forgiven. If you don't forgive, you won't be forgiven. But the modern church just says all you have to do is believe. Well, if you believe, you will be forgiven. And that's how we know you didn't really believe, because you're not really doing what he says. If you love me, you'll keep my commandments. What commandments are those? Thou shalt not murder, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not bear false witness. He lists them off. You want eternal life? They ask him. He says, keep the commandments.
Right.
But they say, oh, the law's been done away with. All we have to do is believe. What is the most satanic doctrine I have seen come along other than that? You don't have to do the will of the Father. You just have to say you believe? No, that isn't it. It is true that you do not obtain salvation, you won't obtain freedom simply because you earned it. But if you aren't a doer of the word, forget it. If you're out there stealing and coveting your neighbor's goods, just forget it. And that really brings us to kind of number 10. They actually have 11 here. Thou shalt do unto others as you have others do unto you. Well, I always, every time I read that golden rule, I think, what if your neighbor's a sadomasochist? He wants to be tortured. So, but that's just my brain working overtime. The last of the commandments is thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's goods, anything that is thy neighbor's. The entire system of social welfare, socialism, is based on desiring what is your neighbor's. It is a covetous system. Socialism is always about covetousness. Somebody said that Jesus Christ was a socialist. Where's the gun? Socialism requires a gun to force you to contribute to your neighbor. It's a redistribution of wealth at the point of a gun. That's not what Christ did. And you see, when you want to have free education for your children, and you know that that's going to be provided because men are going to go out to your neighbors and force them to contribute, you have to forgive that debt. Yeah, you have a right or privilege of sending your kids to public school, but you shouldn't be doing it. Say, I'm not going to be a burden. I'm going to take the responsibility myself. Healthcare, same way. You want to be exempt from healthcare? Start forming a healthcare system within every congregation. Won't be a guarantee, because it's based on hope. But start taking care of one another, and we can show you how to do this little bit by little bit. But you have to start somewhere. You have to start by gathering together. And you have to start forming those congregations. Now, people are afraid of that. For some reason or other, guys say, oh, well, you know, I don't want to have anything to do with church. You know, Christ set millions free in the early church. Thousands. Everybody who got the baptism of Jesus Christ opted out of the system of social welfare set up by Herod, which required the baptism of Herod. They both were saying they were baptizing you into the kingdom of God or the kingdom of heaven, the Melchizedek. But they weren't. They weren't really baptizing you into the kingdom of heaven. They were bringing you into bondage under a system of social welfare that eventually required an income tax. They had property tax, sales tax, income tax, and social welfare. They had all that. And they had gotten all that in Rome, and that's how Rome went from a republic to an empire. And that's the way the United States has done the same, and Australia has done the same, Canada has done the same, and all these other countries across the world have done the same. The covetousness of your neighbor's goods, they have made you merchandise, human resources, human capital. That's how you got to this place. All you have to do now is learn how to operate in a society not dependent upon them, so that when it fails, you've got something going for you. And that's what we're all about, to show you how to do that and help you do that. But you have to do it. You're not going to join the Living Network at hisholychurch.org and suddenly find a ready-made congregation. You can just jump in and, yeah, now I'm all taken care of, I'm all safe because I got all these guys who care about me. Now, we've got it set up so you have to start caring about others, or you won't even find what you're looking for, because that's not what we offer. What we offer you is the Eucharist of Christ, the opportunity of helping others, caring about others, because when you start learning how to do that, the other people like that will be drawn towards you and you towards them. And you will just automatically, in this cause and effect universe, begin to bind yourselves with real caring. But it won't be a bondage of slavery. It will be a bondage of love and of mutual caring and growth. And then all kinds of opportunities will start to open up themselves to you. All kinds of things will open up to your mind that you didn't see before. Because Christ said, you know, I come to take away sight from those who say they see. You look around and everybody's in this matrix and they cannot see what's going on. You've all, I'm sure, experienced that. How much more haven't you seen yet that you could see? And that's where we're going to be trying to take you in the future, and we'll talk about other things. If you have topics that you want to talk about on the show, just get them to me either by email. Probably emailing me isn't the best way. Go to your local contact ministers. They'll tell me. And because I get an awful lot of calls as it is and an awful lot of emails. You wouldn't believe how many I probably got since the show started.
Oh, you're a busy guy.
Well, yeah, that's why we had to go to the network, is to, you know, you can't make this a one-man show. Everybody's got to work together. Everybody's got to do their part. And we're finally getting guys who are doing a pretty good job of that. But we need more, and I'm sure we'll find more in the network that you guys are already forming and those people we haven't even come across yet. And we've got more articles coming out on News of Views, and that always brings in some people. But it's not just, you can't just join an email group. You have to become a part of something that's alive and real. And that's why we've created this living network, so that you'll do that. So we've got a few more minutes. Anything that you can think of that we would, might be beneficial for your audience to hear about, or any questions coming up? We didn't get any calls. I guess I had everybody in raptures where they couldn't dial the phone.
I think that's what it is. Our chat room is quite full. We have a lot of people out there listening. So you have
right.
A lot of listeners. Just, you know, you have captured people's attention, and I appreciate that very much. Your teachings are in line with what we at Freedomizer Radio wish to get across to people. And I especially liked your talking about really developing what someone in the chat room called an invisible church, one that's made up of people in a community touching each other's lives.
Right, that's absolutely essential. Without that, it's just show. And, of course, anybody who's gone to regular churches, there's a lot of show there. I refer to it sometimes as touchy feeling, and I don't mind the, you know, I've gotten used to the hugs, and I can take that now. I'm kind of not that kind of a guy, but the reality is this: Christ came preaching the kingdom of God at hand. It's not a retirement program for the dead. It's a way to become free souls under God for the living. And they weren't persecuted for singing in their churches. They were persecuted. They were accused of robbing the bank at Ephesus, which was the World Bank of its day. Why? Because they were offering an alternative to the system that was being created for the 100 years, 200 years before. And that's exactly what's been created again today. The parallels are uncanny. All we need to do is find out what Christ was really doing and do that. And amazingly enough, it's exactly what Moses was really doing and Abraham was really doing. We just don't know history. And so that's why I wrote these books, and that's why I'm writing more, and that's why I'm on this radio show to tell people about the truth. And if they think that's important, they can try to get with us and help us syndicate this so that we get more and more bigger radio stations and millions of people hearing this instead of the few hundreds or thousands that are now hearing us. We need to get those people out and connect with one another, because there are people on everybody's block that you don't know but will actually receive this message and work towards it if somebody would actually say it out loud. And you won't hear it in those other churches.
Yeah, we just really appreciate having the Sabbath Hour back. Freedomized Radio has left that slot available, and we've just been waiting for the right person to fill it. And I'm just so happy that we found you.
Well, I'm glad to be here. I would encourage everybody to think about this fall festival that we have coming up. It's hard to say what's going to be going on in the world today, much less what's going on in the world come next September. The latter part of September is when we usually have it. But this could be a great opportunity to start getting the notoriety that we're going to need in order to get this message out. We've been on some TV shows and some radio shows, but really very few people have heard this. And we've done the documentation so that if people read the books, I don't get arguments from theologians and ministers anymore. I get a lot of them that talk behind my back, but they're not going to challenge me in the open. I'd be interested if someone wanted to do it, because we've been doing our homework, and I haven't found error in this other than my typos. It's pretty accurate stuff, and it's pretty irrefutable. So, but it is the key. If anybody's really interested in true freedom, they need to find out what Christ was doing, because that is the way. And believe it or not, people say, well, the Christians were all persecuted. Well, there was a lot of persecutions, but they thrived so much that the Roman government tried to emulate what the Christians were doing 300 years after Christ. They didn't do it. The real Christianity was still functioning separately from that. But eventually we lost our way. Now we have to turn around and go back. And the modern churches aren't helping, so we're going to have to do it on our own.
Yes. I would like to cut out for a commercial. Would you like to stick around for the first 5 minutes or so and chat with
I don't know if I'll be able to do that. I'm going to have to run here pretty soon. We'll see. I'll keep you online. I'm going to have to run. But anyway, I really appreciate being on, and I'll let you go.
All right. Well, thank you so much. God bless you. Thank you for tuning in. You're listening to Freedomizer Radio. We just finished the Sabbath Hour, and up next is Team Free State. We'll be back after this commercial break. Welcome, LB.
Hi, Cheryl. How are you tonight?
I'm just great. I'm great, and I'm so happy to have you here.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're so welcome.
I heard the tail end of Brother Gregory's presentation last hour. He always has good information. I've been working with him for about 5 years or so. He's one of the few people I found out there that does have valid information. And, I'm honored to know the man. He's a hard worker and go-getter and wanting to get things done.